This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The White House lays out a plan to overhaul the mortgage market.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in New York. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Morning Open, a look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. Coming up, we'll get the details of the Obama administration's just-released plan to wind down mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are down right now. The Dow is down 36 points at 12,193. The Nasdaq down about 0.25%. S&P 500 down about 0.33% right now. Cotton prices went even higher today, hitting a record of $1.90 a pound. American farmers are expected to plant more cotton this spring, but analysts say surging prices of corn and wheat will probably keep farmers from planting enough cotton to keep up with demand. Now let's get to the report that just came out from the White House on the future of Washington's role in the mortgage industry. Marketplace's David Gura has been going through the report, and he's with us now live from Washington. David, what does it say?
Well, as you said, the goal of all this is to wind down Fannie and Freddie and to get a housing market that's much more stable. The administration says home buyers should have to put more money down, at least 10% on every loan the government guarantees. They also want to reduce the size of the loans they back, and they want lenders to do a better job of ensuring home buyers have enough money to pay their loans. Now, the White House stresses this should be done on a responsible timetable. This report is filled with lots of cautious adjectives and adverbs. They want to do this carefully and responsibly. Michael Barr was an assistant Treasury secretary. He thinks that over time, the government could disentangle itself from the mortgage market.
I think if it's done in a slow and measured way, it should be able to be absorbed by the marketplace without disrupting the housing recovery that we're beginning to see now.
And one last thing, there's a caveat in this report. They say the goal should not be for all Americans to become homeowners. They say that should be a goal for those who have a good credit history and whose finances are secure.
Okay, thanks for your reporting, Marketplace's David Gura in Washington. Let's get some analysis now from our regular Friday guest, Chris Lowe. He's chief economist at FTN Financial, and he's with us live now from here in New York. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So what's your reaction to what David just reported?
Yeah, look, I think this was a very rational response to a crisis that was not just a financial crisis, but also a housing crisis. We learned in a very painful way that not everyone should be a homeowner, that in fact, for many homeowners, that mortgage became a terrible millstone around their necks. I also agree, we don't necessarily need Fannie and Freddie anymore, that the mortgage market is coming back. It's healthier than it was before. And I think we will still have a housing recovery without them.
Well, if we don't need them, then why have we kept them for so long?
Well, look, you know, I think everyone in Washington agrees Fannie and Freddie have to go. They're not popular with the public. Getting rid of them, a great idea. But everyone in Washington is also terrified if housing takes another dive as a result of shutting them down, they could lose their jobs. And for that reason, they're all scared to pull the plug.
All comes back to politics. Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. By Yellow Book 360, offering a spectrum of marketing tools for small businesses designed to go beyond yellow. More at yellowbook360.com. And by Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com.
From the Marketplace Fraud Desk, a couple of items this week. Authorities nabbed a guy trying to use a fake $50 bill in West Virginia, and two people with more than $13,000 in counterfeit money in Maryland. This is nothing new, of course. Counterfeiting was going on in this country even before it was a country. And Ben Tarnoff has just written a book on the history of counterfeiting in the United States. It's called Moneymakers. Ben Tarnoff joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So you tell a lot of great tales of counterfeiting that was going on back in the early days of the Republic. Just give us an idea of the kind of thing that was happening and who was doing it.
So on the one hand, you have to be a very talented artist to be a good counterfeiter. You'd have to engrave an entire piece of copper plate and then ink that plate and run it through a printing press. On the other hand, you have to be aggressively entrepreneurial. You have to think about which communities are best suited to the production and distribution of counterfeit notes.
And you can't just do it right in the middle of a city.
Well, you couldn't. The first counterfeiter profiled in my book is named Owen Sullivan, and he gets into quite a lot of trouble in 1749. He's having a drunken argument with his wife. It's a hot day in Boston. And at one point, his wife yells, "You 40,000-pound moneymaker." Moneymaker is the colonial word for counterfeiter. So the neighbors overhear this and call the authorities. So you're right. Cities at that period were actually very difficult to be a good counterfeiter.
All this sort of brings up a bigger point, I guess, which is that the value of money is only worth the paper it's printed on when it comes down to it. Why do you think we have so much faith today in our dollar bills?
The dollar bill, now that we've completely unhinged from the gold standard, relies entirely on our confidence in it and in the confidence of the credit of the United States. And the real truth about confidence, though, is that it's always sustained American currency, even in the 18th and 19th century, because often the promise to redeem a piece of paper for gold and silver was imaginary.
I have to admit, I have never seen a counterfeit dollar in circulation, at least that I knew of. Have you?
I have, but there's a reason for that, because counterfeit notes actually amount to a small number of the total in circulation. It's about 1 per 10,000 notes, both at home and abroad.
Ben Tarnoff, author of Moneymakers, a new book about the history of counterfeiting in America. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And you can find Moneymakers and other new books about business and economics on our Big Book blog. That's at marketplace.org. And while we're talking currency, a Republican lawmaker in South Carolina has introduced a bill to study whether the state should create its own currency of gold and silver coins. State Senator Lee Bright says people have more faith in those metals these days than they do in the U.S. dollar. A former Fed economist in South Carolina says if people want to hedge against inflation with gold and silver, they could just buy gold and silver. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
In today's economic climate, there's only one sure bet. The world is changing, and at the speed of light. As technology continues to improve the pace and success of the global marketplace, high-quality information is your most important ally in an increasingly uncertain world. I'm Kai Rizdal. As the day's events unfold, join us for all the latest financial news and analysis from around the globe. Later on Marketplace, from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.